You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist on Inspire Excellence. Super excited to tell you that we got Kent Orem, who is the president and the CEO of Idaho Central Credit Union. And today we're talking about culture and how culture grows profit. Before we get into that, Kent's a real good friend with Tommy, and I want to let everybody know that Tommy is actually delayed. He's in a
I think he's in Dallas.
Yeah, he's in Dallas, Texas.
He's in Dallas, somehow snowed in Dallas. I don't know how that works.
Is that what he said?
Well, really? Delays because of traffic.
Really? Right? Yeah. But we don't feel too bad for him because I think he was at a...
He was at the national championship football game. So that does not seem something to mourn.
No, that doesn't seem something to mourn at all.
No.
But he did want to make sure that I over pointed out because, like, hey, that's my guy, Kent. Talk about culture. Yeah. Tommy, I'm talking about culture, and Kent is your guy, but I get him to myself today. So here what we're doing with Inspire Excellence. You've been listening to these podcasts for a while. Just to let you know, it's just really trying to inspire the next entrepreneur, trying to lead those cookie crumbs of ideas, tips, and tricks that help motivate, inspire, uplift, and serve our community. So that's what we're working on. But thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, I've been following you for a while. I was literally sharing with you offline. But when it comes to culture, when I moved here, with my kid sis and myself and a truck. And we were literally living, I took over legal guardianship, my kid sis. We were living in a hotel because I had 3 weeks worth of rent to pay for a hotel. My kid sis is profoundly deaf, development is delayed. We took her to Gooding, Idaho to go to the school, state school, deaf and blind. Yeah.
Been there.
And all of a sudden, over the years, I start watching about culture. You did a speech. And then I got invited to do a speech at the National Association of Credit Unions in Las Vegas, Nevada. And they start talking about ICCU. Huh. Culture over profit. And I thought, man, that's the way to be. Talk to us about how you got into the position that you're in and why culture is so important.
I have been with Idaho Central since 1984.
Ooh, just a minute.
Just a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell some of our team, I have belts older than they are. So I've been there a while and I'm a tech guy.
Yeah.
So my job was a data processing manager to begin and then CIO, eventually executive vice president. And 12 years ago, I became CEO. Wow. And it's a little bit of a different path. There's not a lot of tech folks that in financial institutions anyway, that end up as the CEO. And so it's been fun. I tell the tech folks all the time at work that I'm bilingual. I speak tech and English, so don't try to sneak anything by me. But so what I preach is people over stuff, people over projects, people over technology, people over anything. If you have to choose, and you don't always have to choose, but if you do have to choose, you have to side with people.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are going to get it done anyway. And so if you hammer them because something's not going exactly right, that's not going to help. It just slows things down even further. So people over everything.
Yeah.
And it's not always 100% possible. I mean, you have to focus yourself. But I think at our credit union, we've proven that focusing on culture is a good business model.
Not only have you proven it, and for those that don't know about ICCU, you need to look it up. Not just their culture, but their history. You guys decided to focus on cross-functional leadership, if I'm correct, and really educate from the teller across the board on your most profitable product, which was mortgages. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, we train on mortgages, but we also train on other products because the world isn't just mortgages. So people who want to do savings, we focus in and make sure everybody understands those products as well. And it's not perfect. I mean, if you work on the loan side, you're going to get more loan training.
Yeah.
If you work on the deposit side, you're going to get more deposit training. If you're in the back office, you'll get more back office training. But we have this little thing we call ICAT. It's the Idaho Central Achievement Test. And everybody every year takes this Idaho Central Achievement Test. It's loosely patterned on like an SAT.
Sure.
So it's 100 questions about us, about products, services, fees, culture, whatever. And it changes about every 2 or 3 years. And we don't use it as any sort of motivational, disciplinary tool or anything like that. It's more celebratory. So people are shooting for 100. And we take it every March, the entire credit union, top to
Come
bottom.
On.
And we have a blast with it. And you know, we have an internal Facebook page, and people will get together and show their, you know, score or their departmental average score.
Yep.
And you know, as a really fun side benefit of doing this fun ICAT, people know more about what we do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What, just for relevant terms, can you explain to all of our listeners what culture has done for you? Because as ICCU goes next to other credit unions or next to other banks, you guys are not just competitive, you're blowing them out of the water, but through the core of culture versus profit. You're still profitable, but you led with culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And other credit unions and banks do fine. They do well.
Right.
We're outperforming the national averages by quite a ways. And I think that we know, I used to say, I believe that culture will take us to where we want to go. I don't say that anymore. I know it will, because I've seen it do it. And here's just an example. So for 5 years in a row, we were voted the best place to work in Idaho through Populous, in our category. Now, last year we slipped from first to second to third in the last 3 years. And so now we want to get back to number one.
Yeah.
So we're talking about that all the time. During those same 5 years that we were number one with best place to work in Idaho, we also were the top rated credit union in the nation financially. So our performance was also at the top. And I know from having experienced that they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
That business performance and reliance on people are this, they go hand in hand.
They absolutely do. With Tavuti, the company that I run, which is an online learning management system, when we were talking about that offline, I tell the entire team, you guys, we're a culture company that sells technology. We're not a technology company that sells culture. We're a culture company that sells superior technology. And when I go through a gauging on who do we hire, if they have all the technical skills in the world, but they don't hit our mark on our culture marks, I don't care. They have to be a seven or above in culture, and they can be a five in tech, because I can groom that. Mm-hmm. We can train that. But if they're a 10 in all the tech and they're a zero in culture, I ain't bringing them on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not happening.
We use similar profiling. That's the wrong word, profiling. We look at talent and try to find people.
Feel my phone, by the way. It's probably Tommy lighting me up.
We try to find folks with natural talent to do the job with us. And we have two characteristics that we are very particular about. One is values, or on another profile, it's called relationship.
Yeah.
And the other one is positivity. And so positivity or values, if you're low in either one of those, you don't get to work for us.
Yeah.
And you could be, like you said, you could be off the charts and all the other measurements, but low positivity, low values doesn't work at Idaho Central Credit Union.
And I've had my own personal experience, and I'll ask you about this. And for those that are listening and watching, everyone used to believe that you led with just culture. Everyone used to believe that you led with just profit. It's a coupling. It's a combination of all these many factors, but you have to define your culture. I used to get these, what I called high powered culture killers, like their resume just read off the chart, but they'd come in, they'd slaughter the profit margin, but they'd kill the culture. And I don't know if you've dealt with that or addressed that. As a small business owner, I would feel paralyzed with those men or women, because I'd go, oh my God, they're so good, but they're killing my culture. Once I release the shackles and set my culture metrics, don't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, I think we've had those similar situations, but in our past, not in our present.
Right.
Because we're a lot more selective now. Doesn't mean we never make a mistake or we never have an issue. But generally speaking, we don't have those issues anymore, because we realize how important and how powerful a culture can be. Mm-hmm. And we have some top performers. We have some exceptional top performers, but they also understand the power of culture. And even the ones who might have been a little skeptical aren't anymore.
Yeah,
they've seen what happens.
Yeah, you reform them or you convert them. Again, probably not the right word, but that's exactly right. I've had with these high power culture killers in my past the same way, where you go. And I want also, by the way, where we're talking, I want everybody to know it's okay when you have that. You've heard Kent say, "Hey, we still are making mistakes. We still have room for improvement. In the past, we did it this way." So if you're young, if you're starting out, that's just kind of failing forward.
Yeah.
But as you're listening, you want to listen to the people and the leaders in the community that have done it. But I was going to say that in the past, I was the same way. I've had where these high-powered culture killers really kind of imprisoned me because I was looking at profit. Then once I started saying, here's my culture metrics and matrix on how I'm going to rate, and here's my KPIs for performance. And those that were high powered that didn't leave started seeing the value of positive culture. And that changes the world.
Yeah, definitely. I had an experience early in my career where I had somebody working for me who was really brilliant and
mean.
And I used to give evaluations all the time. You got to be nice. You got to be nice. The work isn't the problem. Mean is the problem.
Right.
And I never really did anything about it other than talk. And then this person left and I hired somebody who was smart and nice.
Yeah.
And I went, why did I spend so much time?
For so long.
Why I beat my head? And so I've been better.
Yeah.
Not perfect, but better at that in my career of saying, okay, this isn't nice. I need nice.
Yeah.
If you can't be nice, then you can't work here. I don't care how smart you are.
Yeah. And I have even unpacking these definitions. One is, what's the definition of nice in your environment, your ecosystem? What's the definition of mean? Because I would tell in my past, I'd say, hey, like you're too hard ass on these guys. You're too hard ass here. You're too this, you're too that.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I think I'm being super nice. I've toned it down. Like, toned it down. I'm scared of
you.
What were you before? And I started unpacking these definitions and going, okay, here's what we define as being too hard. Here's what we define as being too nice. And once we started unpacking those, I gave what we felt was a good horizon and a good direction towards our ecosystem's definition of positive culture. So one of the things, you can't come with a problem unless you come with a solution. Uh-huh. So the problem is, but I believe the solution is this as well. Right. In the old days, the problem is our human brain is not designed to take a statement. It's designed to take a question, uh-huh, or it's designed to unpack those solutions. So those were some of the things that we added into our environment that certainly have helped and enhanced. But I also say that comes from, I've been in your credit union. You guys have done a fantastic job.
Yeah. We have a lot of things. One of those things that you just said, come with a solution. Mm-hmm. I also say come with an open mind. So bring me the problem, bring me your solution, but have an open mind that maybe together we can find a new, better solution.
Yep.
Maybe your solution is perfect, but maybe it's not. And, let's talk about it. Yeah, and that's a little less, I think, threatening to people than think, okay, I have to solve this before I can go
raise
the alert. Because there are people who work for us who are very experienced, and they might have a better idea or a good idea.
Yeah.
And once you start talking, then it's very likely you're going to come with maybe even the best idea.
Yeah.
So that's good. And then we do a thing at work routinely. Every day we have a huddle. HDL stands for Handle Daily Logistics. Every department, every work area. It's supposed to last 8 to 15 minutes, somewhere in there. We talk about priorities. We talk about goals for the day, things that we're working on. And then we just have enough interaction that it's meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And what's come out of huddle is strange. Is what's come out of there is friendship. So you think that what's going to come out of there is productivity and all those things you might be seeking. But what really comes out of that is friendship.
Yes.
And understanding and empathy and all the things that build a really powerful workplace.
Empathy is a key word and something that really needs to be enacted. I'm so glad you said that, because it's hard to be upset with someone that you're friendly with. Mm-hmm. If you have this sales and service mentality, and those service people are just those villains on the other side, mm-hmm, or the salespeople are just those losers that just don't follow compliance. Yeah, there's promise stuff. But once you get them face to face, and once you build that bond outside of that, you start getting empathetic. And empathy is not sympathy. But empathy is a part of EQ, emotional quotient or emotional intelligence. And we have to have empathy to seek to understand. Because if I seek to understand your position and why you did it, then I can support, or I can say, here's what you did, but let's correct it going forward versus, hey, you just did it wrong and that sucks.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant.
Listening is a good thing. It's always a good thing. Always a good thing to have. I said for years I had an open door policy. Well, that's easy. You just go open your door.
Yeah.
What's harder is to have an open mind policy.
Oh.
Where when somebody walks in, you actually listen.
Kent, that's really, my wife says this to me all the time. Less now. She goes, Troy, you're waiting to talk versus listening.
Right.
And I never really thought about that, mm-hmm, because I'm like, honey, of course I'm listening to you, but let me just tell you what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And my my staff would say, Troy, you're just waiting to talk. Mm-hmm. And not that they would say that in that literal phrase, but that's really what they were saying to me. And to your key point, I started listening, going, wait a second, with an open mind versus having those muffles on and just watching their mouth move and then going, oh, their mouth's not moving now. Now let me tell you what I want you to do.
Yeah.
And I got a lot more efficient in my business by doing that. But it was humbling too, because I realized I don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
I just have to have people that do know everything around me in those areas.
So when I became CEO of our credit union, we were, we had 260 employees. Today we have 1,300.
1,300?
Yeah. And you know, and the world has changed, and there's no way I could do what I did 12 years ago today.
Yeah.
And you said humbling, and I would say liberating. Things that's very, very powerful to me is to know that the team that's around me, don't tell them, but they don't need me. It's our secret.
Don't say nothing, guys.
Yeah. So our team is super powerful. They could run Idaho Central Credit Union without me.
That's very liberating. You're right. It's not humble. I say elevate and delegate, but there is a social norm in traditional corporate, because I will say you guys are not traditional corporate.
We are not.
But there's a social norm that says protect and preserve your position and don't share your active knowledge, because if you do, you're out of a job. I tell my team, show everybody what you're doing and show them how to do it and elevate yourself so that you can delegate out and create new positions. And you are correct. They can do it without you, but they couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's true. Yeah. You know what's interesting? I'm gonna brag just a little bit.
I love it.
So during 2019, I have a friend who runs a company called Gonzo Banker.
Okay.
And what Gonzo Banker looks at is credit unions and banks that are a little bit different, that they do things different way, that they perform in a different way. And this year I was selected as the Gonzo Banker of the Year for credit unions for 2019.
Nice.
And the reason was because we do things in a different way.
Yeah.
And that we're very, very successful in doing it. Here we are in Idaho, just barely got plumbing, right? And and the 44th largest and growing credit union in the country, 27th largest in membership. We have 400,000 members of our credit union in Idaho, and there's only 1.6 million people who live here.
I know.
And what kind of penetration is that? And so Gonzo Banker looks at that and they recognize, you guys are doing something different and it's powerful. And I'm excited about that, because now other people around the credit union industry who I know and respect are calling me saying, what do you do that's different?
Yes.
And I say, are you ready? Are you ready to listen? Because I'll tell you. But because nobody really wants to hear people right out of the chute. They want a secret.
They think it's a magic sauce. They think it's a tip or trick.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, you had the Eagle Scouts on
yes,
on a podcast. And one of them said, it's okay to do hard things, or it's good to do hard things. Well, yeah, it is. And there's a lot of hard things to do in life.
Here's where my friends, my associates, sounds like yours as well. They're just looking for that microwavable answer, meaning like
microwavable.
Give it to me and the answer should be 30 seconds or less, and I should be able to implement it in 45 seconds or less. And it is. It's hard work. It's time. I'll say success is simple. And everybody goes, you said it was easy. I go, I didn't say it was easy. Said it was simple.
Simple's
different than easy. I want to share with you another thing that resonates with me when you're speaking. From his mouth to my ears, Warren Buffett in Omaha, Nebraska, we went into his annual fly-in. He said, the most expensive thing that you guys own, and he points to the audience, is the same thing I own. I've lost more deals because of it, and you guys have lost more deals because of it. And we're all like, well, there's no way I own the most expensive thing that he owns, because he owns private jets, this, that, and the thing. He said, a closed mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most expensive thing that we all own, is a closed mind. And when I hear you speaking and when I hear you talking about your culture, you've invited people to get rid of their most expensive liability and to open up their asset, which is their open mind. And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I wish I was as good at it as I sound sometimes, because it is hard, right? You know this is hard. When you have an idea and somebody else has a competitive idea and their idea is better, sometimes that's hard to let go of yours and let them do theirs. It gets easier with practice.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm perfect at this. Sometimes I'm still a pouty 14-year-old.
Tommy and I were talking about it the other day. There really needs to be almost a commiseration session with the community leaders, because I don't think people understand when we're on these podcasts and when we're speaking and we're delivering our message as community leaders, the message we're delivering is a message that we aim to practice towards perfection, but we're not perfect at it. And there are months or weeks that once a month I go in fetal position and cry. And once a month I slip off my bike, my culture bike. And I'm like, hey, screw that or screw this. And I'm mad and pouty. But I think that we get held to a higher court because they hear these sound bites and they go, well, I saw him in a bad mood one day.
Yeah.
Of course you did. He's a human being. Yeah. I'm a human being and it happens. So when we deliver this information, this motivation, this direction, it's not that we're saying we're great at it. We're practitioners towards greatness. We're not great yet, but we're getting better every time.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I became CEO, I had an idea that I wanted to run the credit union in a different way. And I didn't know whether it would be a better way, but I definitely wanted to do it a different way. And so I convened this meeting of my leadership team. And for a few months, I was pretty good. And then one meeting, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 months in, I just reverted. And I reverted back to that old guy. I recognized it at least. So I went into the restroom and I looked in the mirror and I had a chat with myself.
Yeah.
And I actually found that as a powerful moment to look at myself, not to see how do I look or, you know, but actually look at that guy and look inside of him.
How many have done that?
Do you want to be this guy or you want to be the guy you were hoping to be? Which do you want to be? That was a powerful moment for me. I wish I could remember the day. I can definitely remember the experience.
It's a defining moment, I think, for a lot of leaders like yourself, because it's when we have that self-reflection or when really that moment of clarity, if I can use that word and steal them from the recovery words out there. But that moment of clarity where you go, whoa. Who am I and what am I doing? What about failure? I get challenged with failure all the time because I'm always trying new things. Or, I bet you fail. I don't know if you heard of the lean methodology of management, but sure. I tell everybody, part of failure is an investigation into intelligence or intel or an investigation into knowledge to find out I don't want to do that. So I see it as failing up, not falling down. I don't know how.
I use the phrase noble failures, which comes from somebody else. I don't know, but that's what we talk about as noble failures is, you know, you tried that. It was a great attempt, but it didn't really work out. We have an experimental branch that we run in Rexburg, Idaho, and we try things there.
Yeah.
And some of them work and some of them don't. And sometimes it's hard when you have something vested in something to say, it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the middle of that actually right this second of trying to decide, okay, this piece of that branch doesn't seem to be working.
Really?
Let's talk that through. Yeah. And it's been challenging for the folks involved to get there.
Probably because it challenges their historic kind of socialized idea of failure, meaning like I'm the one that came up with the idea and it failed.
Yeah. There's money.
And there's money involved.
And there's money.
And then there's money involved. There's accountability.
Yeah.
But if they retrain, and I work just like you do, Ken, I work to retrain my brain every day and go, let me see it from this perspective, meaning we spent X amount of dollars to find out we don't need to lose Y amount of dollars. And if I'm retraining my brain, fail fast and fail early. And it's still hard on the team, though, because the team will get very vested.
Yeah.
And it sounds like your team gets very passionate.
And when you're us and you're running a financial institution with fiduciary responsibilities and public trust, you have to make sure that if you fail behind the scenes. You have to fail in tight private ways.
Yes.
Because you can't afford to fail in a big public way. That doesn't work out.
No, because the spotlight's on you. And do you feel that there's more of a responsibility as the credit union itself becomes more successful, as your brand attached to the credit union brand becomes more successful, there are people that are waiting for you to fall versus watching you succeed over and over again.
Yeah.
Do you feel that pressure?
I think you feel that pressure. I think though in the communities of where we are and the people that I know, like Tommy and now you, more people are looking for us to succeed than to fail. I think that's part of life is make sure you surround yourself with the right people. I've never met, honestly, and I did not mean this because I'm on the podcast, you and Tommy. I have never met a more positive guy.
Tommy sees
the brightness in everything.
There is a gravitational pull. And for those listeners and viewers that are watching, if you haven't been around Tommy, in fact, there's a gravitational pull with you. I don't know how to describe it, but like before I met you, I wanted to meet you. Before I met Tommy, I wanted to meet Tommy because that that leadership in that confidence, not just the confidence in success, but the confidence in, hey, I'm willing to try, is very, for lack of a better term, attractive. And you're mm-hmm. like, so as young leaders, and I say young because I'm almost 50 and Tommy's 51 or 52
yeah.
up there. He's old man, Tommy.
He's old man.
But, you know, you those leaders and you guys as leaders are very gravitational, meaning people want to be around that. And so to maintain that culture is brilliant.
Yeah.
But even with Tommy or with you, I've never seen him have a bad moment. But I wonder what do you guys do if you do have a bad moment? Who do you go to?
Well, I think the people who see our bad moments, maybe I won't speak for him, but for me, it's my family, it's my wife. Yeah. It's, you know, that's where I vent and I'll kind of let loose a little bit. And
yeah.
sometimes, like she asked me, one of these days I'm going to retire because I'm way older than both of you. Mm-hmm. And I have some things that I want to do. And she said to me the other day, what are you going to do when you retire and you're not a big shot anymore? I'm like, that's a hard question. I don't know if I'm a big shot now. She goes, you're not a big shot now. I just wonder how you were going to answer that question. She didn't say exactly right. that, but that's kind of the gist of it.
We all have wives. We don't.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Tommy and I were talking about, Tommy will say retirement's not in his playbook, but there is next adventures.
Yeah.
You know, so what's,
me too.
What's your next adventure? Because once you've conquered the mountain, I mean, look at BVA. I mean, they conquered the mountain. Like once you conquered the hill, what's next?
You know what I want to do? I want to do some things that are back in my roots. I want to go drive tractors for my friend on his farm. How much fun would that be?
I'm so with you right now.
He told me I'm not qualified anymore, but I think I am. I think I could do it.
I think I'm with you on that though.
Yeah. That would be fun, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think I experience technology and modern ag.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a blast.
Yeah.
You know, I actually have a bucket list of things I want to do that are all weird and like that. I guess weird from my perspective, but things that are just, you know, they occur to me as I'm out, like driving the boat from the parking lot of Disney World over to Disney, to Disney World and all these happy kids in that boat. I don't want to drive the boat back.
Right.
I just want to drive it over there.
Just drive it over there because they're going to be sad when they drive back. Right. But Kent, that's an interesting thing because one of the things I love to do, I love to mow, vacuum, and iron.
Yeah, mowing's the best.
Yeah, and my wife's like, why? I go, because I can simply see
absolutely
the instantaneous before and after.
Yeah, the straighter the better, right?
Yeah, when I can iron, I go, it was wrinkled. Now it's not.
Exactly.
I vacuum, I go, it was, it's a fascinating thing for her. But I said, I guarantee every one of us leaders that are out there have something. And you just brought up, I want to drive a tractor.
Yeah.
My guess is it's because we handle so many complex things. You have, a multi-million-dollar, if not billion-dollar institution that you're working with. You have 1,300 employees and team members that you have
to. And they all depend on you.
They all depend on you.
Yeah.
So when you think tractor, when you think mowing, I'm the same way. I go, because I can see it and it's simple.
Yeah. I iron my shirt every day just because I like it. It's warm.
I throw it in the dryer. It's so funny you say that. Yeah. I throw it in the dryer because it's warm.
Yeah, because they're warm.
Yeah, just get it.
Summer, winter, doesn't matter. I like warm.
How did you go from college? What college did you attend?
Idaho State University with a computer science degree.
Yeah. And do you still play in tech at all?
Just as a user.
Yeah.
Not, a user and the person who supervises our tech at our credit union, the CIO, he reports up through me. And so I'm not an active everyday participant, but certainly engaged. We have a thing at our credit union called the Technology Steering Council. I'm an active part of that. And that's where the big stuff happens for us.
Okay.
Is we get together and talk about, the big projects or big whatevers that are coming our way in tech. And
what does the Steering Council do?
So we evaluate security policies. We look at security reports. If we're doing a major upgrade or a major enhancement or major procurement of systems, we look at that. How's it all going to integrate in?
Got it.
Just to make sure that we stay, cohesive
in the
strategy.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant and important. One of the things, if you can talk about transition, because you seem to be able to transition from even your roots to tech to CEO. And I don't see you as chief executive officer. And just hearing you call your conversation and watching your speeches, you're really the chief evangelist officer, in my opinion.
I would say that's true.
Yeah, I see you as the chief evangelist. Because
I probably should wear a varsity letter to work and just walk around being the coach the whole time.
I'm going to buy you a Letterman jacket.
So, awesome. So we give Christmas gifts to our employees every year.
Yeah.
And And I pick them.
No.
And then we deliver them. You know, a group of us goes out and we deliver them, and it takes about a week and a half to do it. And it's just amazing to shake the people's hand as you hand them an expression of your love to them and watch their reaction to that. And it actually doesn't matter the size of the gift. It's the action.
Yeah.
That matters.
I would agree with that. My sister, I've shared with you earlier, my sister's profoundly deaf and she's developmentally delayed. Chronologically, she's 38 now, mm-hmm. almost 39. But intellectually, she's probably anywhere between 13 and 16, depending on what we're talking about.
Okay.
But speaking to gifts, for her, it doesn't matter what you get her, as long as you get her something.
Yeah.
And it's all about the presentation as well. And I think that there is a lot to be taken in when we start talking about culture that we can take from others that, like yourself or like my kid's sister, as children now, I see them thinking it's got to be bigger because last year was bigger. Or last year was this big and this year is going to be this big. But then I see my kid's sister, I hear you talking about it's about the action. Like it's the action of showing authentic love and like, love. Man, I want you to.
The L word is fine.
Yeah, love. Like it just, mm-hmm. man, here, I love you. And yep. brother, here it is.
Yep.
Yeah, you bring that authentic truth out.
Somebody said to me this year while we were delivering gifts, so, you know, we're getting really big. This is a really big chore. Do you think you'll be able to do this forever? And I said, well, I don't know how long forever is, but as long as I'm here, I will.
Yeah.
I don't care if it takes a month.
Yeah.
The important part for me of December is going and seeing every team member and shaking their hand.
Yeah.
That's what I do. That's my task for that month.
Because you value and you see the intrinsic value and there's a true ROI. Within the morale and the team of that. Funny you say love. I'll tell Tommy, like, hey, love you, bud. Hang up the phone. My wife goes, do you think that people think that's weird? And I go, no, I don't.
Maybe. Who cares?
Like, that's right. Okay, say I love you. Like that. Yeah. That's good. And I'll say my staff, I love you, man. Like,
yeah,
that's great. Because I do. Philanthropy, I always challenge people with this. The word philanthropy, the root word is Philippio. And they say, well, it's all about giving money. No, philanthropy, the Greek word is the love of mankind. Mm. That's what it is. I think you're a real philanthropist because you have a love of mankind. You have a love of your community culture. And you really have set a precedent for not just Idaho to follow, but the world. And that's awesome.
That's nice. Yeah, it's really frustrating when we do go out and deliver our gifts because sometimes we go to our branches and they're just too busy, you know, to interact. And so I always walk through the lobby and at least make eye contact because it's so, you know, I just want to let them know how much I love them.
Yeah. Are we losing that in some of our younger business startups? Do you think that we're losing? Because now I'm seeing AI come up. I'm seeing automation. And I don't knock it. Just so everybody knows, we use AI in our learning management system. We use automation. But I still think there needs to be this. I tell Tommy and the world this all the time. I think the neutering of the American male is happening. And I think the neutering of the American entrepreneur is happening because we're desensitizing what really builds core values. Do you see that happening in other companies?
I see that as a risk even to our own company. So what we focus ourselves on with AI and robotics and technology is, can we make the job that we do easier without taking away the human interaction we have with our customers?
Yeah.
So can we automate the back office? Can we make the transactions that the back office handles more robotic, more accurate, quicker, faster, more reliable? Can we automate it where it really matters to me so that we can enable the folks that really interact with people to be better?
Yeah.
And I don't want to ever get to the point. In fact, I don't want to ever get to the point. Let me finish that our credit union has turned into a place where you talk to a machine.
Yeah.
Now when we first deployed a call center at our credit union. I mean, I'm old. So long ago, we deployed a call center and we put in this calling tree, press this. And after about, I don't know, maybe 11 or 12 months of feedback, like we hate pressing buttons. We just want to talk to a person. Like, why can't we do that?
Why can't you do it?
Why can't we just, we built the tree. Why can't we unbuild the tree? Let's go cut it down.
Yeah.
So we went out and we took it down and we still have like, I think there's one or maybe two steps in there that you can just listen and then you connect to a person. And 100% of our calls are answered by a person.
Really?
If you choose to interact with technology at Idaho Central, you can.
Yeah.
We're certainly not behind in any way.
So it's an option.
It's an option.
It's an option.
But we lead with people.
Yeah. And I think it's important for those that are out there, because we're challenged with the same thing. And because automation can scale very quickly. Artificial intelligence is becoming so advanced now that you literally can't tell if you're talking to a person or a bot. You can use email automation that can personalize an email with your first name, my first name, and pull keywords that I know that you like. And so it can be very artificial, but I think the keyword is authentic. Mm-hmm. And using that automation that enables, using your word, and enhances the person's position, mm-hmm. and the member's experience.
Right.
As long as it enhances the member's experience and enhances the person's position, then I think that we look at it that way, but never looking at it as replacement of.
Yeah.
Because the human touch is so important.
It's important. I think it's becoming popular again. It's in vogue. I think that we've swung a little too far to the tech side. And I think people are coming back saying, no, I want all that stuff. I want all the gadgetry.
Yeah.
But how about you talk to me?
Yeah.
How about we work through this together? And I gain from your experience and you gain from mine, and we come up with a good common solution.
But that's culture. And Tom Senior, I will say, here at BVA, if you guys have not met Tom Senior.
I know Tom Senior.
Tom Senior is my guy.
He's built a building for us. He's awesome.
Dude, Tom Senior is my guy. But he's got culture. Mm-hmm. He's got that gravitational culture. I have a plaque on my desk that says, "What was once old is now new again. So here I am." Mm-hmm. Because I'm still very yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, please, and thank you. My American flag flies high. When I say thank you, I look up. When I ask what needs to be fixed, I look in, and we pray. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I tell everybody, man, you don't like it, get out. I don't care. Not that I'm disrespecting anything that you don't believe in, but this is the way we do it. Mm-hmm. Tom Senior represents and embodies that. And if you've been around him, because he's building your building,
I have, yeah.
He when he's on time, he's early. When he's not early and he's on time, he considers himself late, and late is unacceptable. So if you're a minute over, and he has no problem with calling it out, I think you're absolutely right. There is a overcorrection because we got too much tech, and now we're going back to the, hold on, there are some core values to pull in from here.
I think we might end up using it the right way for a while. Yeah. And who knows how society is going to evolve, but it feels like to me, like even with your company that you're doing, I think we're figuring out a way to use technology to help us,
yeah,
instead of replace us.
It's tough, and it's always a pendulum swing, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's politics, banking, finance, automation, technology, culture is always in the middle of that pendulum swing. But notice it's always in the middle. I tell we use a plum in construction. There used mm-hmm. to be an old plum, and mm-hmm. I would tell you where center is. I have a plaque that hangs the plums right here, and mm-hmm. it points to culture. Mm-hmm. So that plum might swing this way, might swing mm-hmm. this way. But remember, the center,
yeah.
start with culture and start with people.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I'm going to go make one of those.
No way. Don't make one, because I know that Tommy are going to get one. I think it'll be awesome.
Good. Sounds good.
Kent, I want to thank you so much for being on Inspire Excellence. And I want to tell everybody out there that if you have not been to ICCU, definitely, without a doubt, stop by. Just stop by and see what culture is about. See what love is about. And I also promise you, they probably got some good products out there for you. So, Kent, thank I you, appreciate sir. You.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.
All right. Stand by for after hours Inspire Excellence if you want. But now we're just shooting the crap.
Okay.
So how much? We good on time?
Yep.
Cool. Sweet. I think I was good. Perfect. Yeah. So now we just shoot the crap now for 10 minutes, and if it catches the video, it catches the video. It's always the after shots. But yeah, Tom Senior and I, we hit it off great. And I come off that same background. I came from yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, please, mm-hmm. and thank you. My mom is a 3-time recovering drug addict, hard drugs. Mm-hmm. I took over legal guardianship of my kid, sis, in 98. But my kid, sis, I tell everybody, is the one that taught me the most about business.
Oh, that's nice.
Because she taught me how to appreciate a present. She taught me how to always be, because sis just always happy, man. And she taught me how to brush off things. Like the times that she is mad, she's mad for a minute. And then, she's like, I'm mad. This happened, that happened. Can we go bowling?
Yeah, that's right.
Can we go bowling? And then she's like, well, then I'm fine if we go bowling.
Yeah, you're fine if we go bowling.
Yeah. And I think it's having a short memory for the negative.
Yeah.
And having a long retention for the positive.
Yeah. I was thinking, when I watched that podcast with Tommy and his dad.
Yeah.
I thought, man, I wish I could do a podcast with my dad.
Why not
passed away.
Oh.
So, but his name was Ellis H. Oram. He was a He called himself a car peddler. He was a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
And everything that I am is I just reflect him.
So here's what I would tell you. You are doing an interview with your dad, and you just stay on that topic. I really believe in that. I believe that you have to look at life beyond the obvious, and you have to see legacy is so important. Where I come from, legacy is everything. Mm-hmm. You can be piss broke. You can just be, you know, piss pot broke, but never, ever, ever lose your legacy. And so what was your father's name again?
Ellis H. Orem.
Ellis H. Orem. Mm-hmm. And if you've been
bodied peddler.
Car peddler.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he probably taught you things what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, he absolutely did.
Yeah, he taught you both.
He was a great salesman and a great person. He, you know, people would call our house and get a wrong number. And he'd say, hey, hang on. Whoa. Are you thinking about buying a car anytime in your future? And he sold cars that way. And he was just a wonderful man.
Where was Ellis based out of?
Blackfoot, Idaho.
Blackfoot, Idaho. Mm-hmm. Really? Yeah. Did he serve a mission?
He served a mission later in his life.
In his life, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Salt Lake City on a mission in Salt Lake, yeah. So, yeah, he was a great guy. My mom was a wonderful lady. And,
yeah.
And I come from great roots.
That is awesome. Did your children get to meet Grandpa and Grandma?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I have three daughters.
Yeah.
And they met him and all but the youngest. He died 10 years ago. And all but the youngest, two or three, met him and loved him too.
So funny. I'll talk about, we have no children of our own. My beautiful bride of 18 years and I have no children of our own, but I have my kid sister who's an adult with special needs. And I talk about units of time. Because if you met me in the unit of time where I was fisticuff and getting in trouble and doing all the stuff that I probably shouldn't have been doing, you'd go, I know that guy. That guy is not a good guy. Then you meet me, you know, in later on in my life and a community leader, this and that and other thing. Same thing with grandpas. My grandpa Nick, who I believe was the greatest man that walked on this God's green earth. He was awesome. He's a hunter. He's a fisherman. He's a patriot. He's Silver Star medalist. You know, he loved his country, loved everything. But richest guy I know that lived in a single wide trailer. And people go, he's not rich. He lived in a single wide trailer. I go, are you kidding me? That guy's got everything.
Yeah.
Like he's got it all. But units of time, sometimes I'd hear stories about my granddad.
Yeah.
That like, oh, your granddad was a hustler. He was a bootlegger. He was this. What? And my granddad would go, that's what makes us who we are,
that's
Troy.
That's what makes us who we are.
Yeah.
My dad, there was a place in Blackfoot called the Bon Ton. And it used, in my era, it was a chocolate shop. But in his era, it was a bar and a pool hall. And I've heard from other people, never from him, but other people that he got in a little row there one time and got thrown off the balcony and landed on a pool table and he was hobbled up for a little while.
Yeah.
When he met my mom, he was a little bit rough. And grandpa, you know, my grandfather did not like my daddy.
And, really?
And he wooed my mom anyway, and they eloped, which would just horrify my mom to ever even say that she eloped with this guy, this ruffian. And and look what, you know, they did all right.
But that's character, right?
Yeah.
That's how you paint in 3D.
Yeah.
You know, that's what adds that color and that spice. That's Tom Sr. He has that
his spice.
Yeah, he has that spice. But in the core of it, solid as the day is long, man.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's fun to think about them.
I'd love to talk with you more, Kent. I really would. I'd pick your brain all day long. I definitely want to talk to you about, if you got lip moss, I'll talk to you about what we do.
I'll look it up.
Look it up. I just sharing with you. Like we literally.
I think we're 2 years into lip moss or so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I'll have, you know, our HR guy loves to look at this stuff. I'll look it up with him and see what it looks like.
Look it up. Take a look at it.
Yeah.
Tommy and I are doing an event in May. Is that where we're doing it? Aspire Excellence Awards in May.
Oh, really?
I don't know if he's talked to you about that, but Tommy has been a driving force. And to your point, like that guy just never sees anything on a downside. So I'm always saying inspire, uplift, and serve. And from my kid's sister, because she's inspiring, uplifting, and serve. And Tommy's like, we got to do an award ceremony for inspire, uplift, and serve.
Oh.
So we're talking about doing it in May and recognizing community leaders. He's going to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's your buddy.
That guy who went out and caroled.
Yes.
With ALS. Are you kidding
me? Come on, stop.
Really?
Like that.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's incredible. That guy, with the family with 18 children.
18 kids already giving, you know.
Come on.
He might be giving more than most.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So many of those stories are not unrooted. And one of the reasons they don't get unrooted, and I honestly believe this, is they're not doing it for the publicity.
Right. Yeah.
And two, they're so busy in their mission.
Destiny's pretty busy.
Yeah, that they don't got the time to go, hey, come hey, check
come
this
check
out.
Me out. Yeah. I'm a good guy.
Yeah, and like, then
you got 18 kids.
18 kids, 16 foster kids and two, right? Yeah,
I had three girls, you know, and they were all teenagers at once. And it was like,
it's insane.
Yeah. I can't imagine 18. I told my wife, 18? Read this story.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. But I do think that you got the other ones out there on the other spectrum that are, they do one little thing and they go, call the news and tell everybody about me. Nah, dude, you unroot these stories. Yeah. They're amazing. Yeah. They're amazing. So cool.
Thanks
Ken.
For the chat.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.